Good day and welcome to the Statoil Hydro conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to your host today, Mr. Lars Sørensen. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Statoil Hydro Investor and Analyst Conference. My name is Lars Sørensen, and I'm the head of investor relations. Earlier today, we announced a strategic alliance with Chesapeake and Statoil Hydro's farm-in into the Marcellus shale gas area in the U.S. The purpose for the next 45 to 55 minutes is to present the agreement with Chesapeake in a little more detail and allow for questions around the deal. With me here in the studio in Oslo is the Executive Vice President and Head of International E&P, Mr. Peter Melby, and Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, Eldar Sætre. After a short presentation given by Peter Melby, we'll open for questions. Questions can either be sent in via the internet using the submit questions on your screen, or it can be asked directly over the phone after the presentation. The operator will be back and give you instructions as to how to ask questions after the presentation. The presentation used today can be downloaded from our website, www.statoilhydro.com. Please note the disclaimer and safe harbor statement at the back of the presentation. And without further ado, let me pass the microphone to Peter Melby.
Okay, thank you very much. It's a pleasure for me to announce this deal, which in my mind is a very natural build on our existing gas strategy. As you are well aware of, we have a position in the Cove Point terminal. We have built a significant capacity in terms of gas marketing and trading, and we're also a gas producer out of the Gulf of Mexico area. So this deal, in my view, comes as a natural consequence of that strategy. In addition, of course, it adds also a new platform for growth to our company in an area, in a field of activity, which we think carries a lot of potential in terms of future growth. Next page. The agreement is, as you can see, an agreement between two very significant gas players. Chesapeake, the number one producer of natural gas in the U.S. and the leading gas shale player. Statoil Hydro, the second largest supplier of gas, natural gas to Europe. We will enter the Marcellus gas shale play as the first step. And this is important in my mind, we have also agreed to look at opportunities globally within the area of unconventional gas, as this is something which, in my mind and in the mind of Chesapeake, is an obvious opportunity going forward.
Next page.
We acquire a 32.5% interest in the Marcellus play. This represents an area of about 6.6 million acres. The recoverable reserves amounts to between 2.5 and 3 billion barrels of oil equivalent. The payment that we make is in the amount of $3,375 million, out of which 1,250 million is to be paid up front and closing, and the remaining is to be paid as a carry of 75% as a consequence of Chesapeake executing on its drilling program going forward. If you look at the consideration on an per acre basis, we are paying $2,100 per acre up front, including the carry. We are paying $5,800 per acreage, and I think this compares favorably with other deals of a similar nature that has been done recently. The deal is cash flow neutral in 2013 at gas prices well below the current forward curve. In addition to sort of the defined acreage, we will also be participating in Chesapeake's future leases in the Marcellus area.
Next page.
This does represent a step change in Statoil's U.S. gas market position. It makes us an early mover into what we regard as a very attractive area in terms of the Marcellus. It is obviously early days in Marcellus, and some will point to the risk. We find we will also point to the very significant opportunity, and I think there has been a lot of interesting information coming out about the Marcellus during the past few months. The producing opportunities are located close to existing infrastructure and also very close to the attractive part of the U.S. market, something which also was one of the considerations that were made when we entered into the position that we hold in the Cove Point terminal. Our equity production will be building up to about 200,000 barrels sometime after 2020. And of course, we will integrate these positions into our existing gas marketing outfit in the United States. Next, please. Looking then at who Chesapeake are, you probably company is familiar to most of you. It's the largest, one of the largest independent E&P companies in the U.S. It is a primary player in the shale play. It has 6,000 employees, and it holds an acreage of about 15.6 million net acres, and proven reserves in its balance sheet of about 2 billion barrels of oil equivalent. Almost more importantly, it's the largest driller in the U.S., operating about 145 drilling rigs onshore. When we then look at the shale gas resource potential, the global unconventional gas resource base is about 32,000 TCF for 5,700 billion barrels, and as such, as I said initially, represents a very significant resource potential. You know that unconventional gas is found in either tight sands, shales, or coal bed methane, and looking at deal flows in other parts of the world, this is something that is growing in importance, very much due to the development in terms of producing technologies with the application of horizontal wells. Next one, please. If we then look at the terms of the deal, I said we will get access to estimated recoverable reserves of between 2.5 and 3 billion barrels. The number of wells that will be required is something between 13,000 and 17,000. And the average recovery per well, about 3.1 billion cubic feet. The estimated capex per well is 3.5 million. And the operating cost, excluding the transportation, between $4.5 and $5 per barrel of oil equivalent. The expected peak production after 2020, at least 200,000 barrels of oil equivalent. Our net revenue interest will be the same as Chesapeake's, about 87%, and this 87% reflects the fact that, you know, royalties are being paid to the land owners, and the about 13% here reflects the average royalty that Chesapeake is paying to these landowners. So basically, we feel that we have an agreement which creates a strong alignment between ourselves and Chesapeake.
Next page, please.
Yeah. The gas resources are found at depths between 3,000 and 9,000 feet. We are talking about high-quality dry gas, and this will be produced by applying horizontal wells drilled from a set of well pads. The horizontal reach of these wells will be between 2,000 and 4,000 feet. In terms of looking at the time it takes to drill one of these wells, it takes about 30 days, and typically about 75% of the total volume is produced during the first 2 years, and then the production falls off to extend a number of years, in some cases as much as 60 years. Next, please. When it comes to the HSE, something which of course is important for our company, the environmental impact of this activity is limited. It is of course a matter of managing land and reducing the imprint in the landscape, and this is of course minimized through the use of well pads and extended reach wells. There is an issue related to water management, an issue in the sense that this, if there should be a concern, would be the one, but we feel that this is very well taken care of and that there is upside in terms of looking at a few at ways of in the future also depositing the water in deep wells. Greenhouse gas emissions is something which is very close to the Norwegian heart. This is not an issue in this case. So what we feel is that we have entered into an agreement with Chesapeake that carries a lot of value and a lot of opportunity. It fits perfectly with our gas strategy. It establishes a new growth platform for our company. We are doing this together with a company which is reputed as being one of the leading shale players in the United States, and we have the possibility of working together with them, also identifying, accessing, and executing on international opportunities. So we feel this is a very interesting agreement for Statoil Hydro, which carries a lot of prospects for the future.
Well, thank you very much, Peter. That was the presentation. We'll now open for questions, and as I said in the beginning, there are two ways of asking questions to Peter Melby and our CFO, Eldar Sætre. Either you send it in via the internet by pressing the submit question button, or you ask the question directly over the telephone. And John, the operator, could we please have the instructions as to how to post questions via the telephone?
Indeed, sir. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal reach our equipment. We will take questions in order received, and we will take as many as time permits. If you find that your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, ladies and gentlemen, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for just a moment to allow everyone to signal for questions. Mr. Sorensen, before we take questions, I hand it back to you.
Thank you very much. I've got one question from the internet here. Neil McMahon from Sanford Bernstein. The acquisition price per acre seems very high, as the acres in the core area were selling at $2,000 per acre and have been falling recently. Included the extra cost of carry, you have paid over $3,600 per acre, and you're buying from a distressed seller.
Well, you know, we have looked, of course, at deals that have been made in similar place over the past few months as one indicator. The other is we've also looked very carefully at the value that we feel can be created to this deal, looking at the potential of the wells as we estimate them, looking at the data of the more than 100 wells. I think it's about 350 that has been drilled in this area, and also the lateral wells that have been drilled. And we feel comfortable with the relationship between what we are paying and the value that can be created through this deal. So we feel, by actual fact, that it compares favorably with other deals that have been made. And we feel that there is a lot of value in this deal for ourselves, and hopefully also a lot of value in it for Chesapeake.
Thank you, John. Can we take a telephone question, please?
Indeed, sir. Our first question comes from Joe Allman with J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Hi, everybody. Could you tell me what the required level of drilling is by Chesapeake based on your agreement, and what your plans are for ramping up the activity?
Well, the idea here is that they will be ramping up and having altogether 40 wells in activity by 2012.
40 rigs
in activity by 2012. And, of course, also through the carry arrangement, this is structured the way that these wells have to be delivered within a certain time frame for the carry actually to work out and deliver the amounts of money that we have specified. So in terms of rig availability and well programs, we feel that we have a deal which is well structured to execute the programs required to meet the production numbers that we have been looking at and are the basis for our economic calculations.
Gotcha. And what natural gas price did you use to justify the economics?
Well, you know, what we have been looking very carefully at is what are sort of break-even costs for this deal. And then we have been looking at the forward curves. And what I would say is that this deal delivers very satisfactory economics at prices well below what we presently can see in the forward curve.
Okay, great. And then what data out of the Marcellus made you particularly interested in getting involved pretty heavily in this play?
Well, you know, we have been looking at the well logs of a very high number of wells that has been drilled in this area, and which is sort of establishes the structures that are carrying the gas quantities. We've looked at the horizontal wells and the results from those, and we have looked at the productivity in those wells, and these things combined have convinced us that this is a very interesting play to get involved in.
Great, thank you, very helpful.
We'll take a question from the internet. It is from Mark Smedley from Energy Intelligence. You say that it's a strategic agreement to jointly explore unconventional gas opportunities worldwide. Where outside the U.S. do you mean?
Well, I mean, we've said that this is an agreement to cooperate globally, and then we actually mean globally, and we will have to look at this very carefully, but known to everybody from a geological perspective, there are great amounts of and great opportunities in terms of conventional gas in China. You have Ukraine, you have Poland, you have Romania. There are these kinds of deposits to be found in a number of geographies, and the next stage for us is now to look carefully at where the opportunities really sit and which ones we want to pursue. We have, for instance, also, I mean, we are involved in Algeria, and we see that there are lots of unconventional opportunities in that country. This is something for the next stage.
All right, John, can we take a question from the telephone, please?
Indeed, sir. Our next question will come from David Heikkinen with Tudor Pickering. Please go ahead.
Check some math. When you think about your drilling carry, that's about 800 gross wells that'll be drilled between 2009 and 2012. Is that about what you're expecting?
800 wells.
It's probably in that ballpark, yeah.
Okay, and as you think about beyond 2012, you talk about running. Do you think 40 rigs is about the maximum that the joint venture is going to be able to operate, or is that just kind of a ballpark number at this point?
The target is 50 actually. So, but 40 is what we can do with up to 2012.
Oh, okay, so you'll ramp to 50 rigs kind of longer term to get to the 200,000 barrels equivalent. And those production volumes, were those net to Statoil and the resource
potential? Yeah, the production volume to 200,000 that I mentioned, that's net to Statoil, yes.
Perfect. That's great. Looking at where the acreage is located, know that Chesapeake has acreage in New York, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. Is there any thought about where the core is going to be for the first phase of development?
Well, in terms of the core areas, you can see sort of on the map that is provided in our presentation where the sort of yellow parts are really the parts that we're in, and it's sort of the utmost northern part, and it's the southern part, which is really the core areas.
If you go to page one in the presentation,
okay.
There are three pictures, and the middle one actually shows the lease.
And you see the yellow area on the top of the borderline between, is it Pennsylvania and New York City? There you see New York State. You see the yellow area there, and you see it down in the south, in West Virginia.
And what percentage of acreage is that out of the total 1.8 million acres is in that core?
About 50 to 60% is in that core.
Thank you. That was it. I appreciate it.
I will take a question from the Internet. It's from Fidelity. How comparable is the deal with recent Antero Dominion transactions of 114,000 acres at $3,037 per acre rate? I mean, is it rich acres or any technical color?
Do you know about Antero? I do not know really the details of that deal, so I find it a bit difficult to sort of comment on a comparison with something I don't really know.
Can we take a question from the phone, please, John?
Indeed. Our next question now will come from Ian Reid with Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Three quick questions and then one on strategy. Firstly, are you going to hedge the gas price on this? I think you've done that in previous U.S. transactions. And secondly, did I hear you right when you said of the individual well volume, 75% is produced in the first 2 years? And thirdly, in terms of CapEx, you give a CapEx per well number. Is that a kind of built-up number to include kind of processing and transportation equipment as well? And fourthly, on strategy, I noticed you mentioned coal bed methane, which has obviously been in the news recently. Is this also a key part of what you're looking at, and is that in the U.S. or in places such as Southeast Asia?
Hello. I could, I love that. I could do the question on the hedging.
Thanks.
As you know, we pretty much consider oil and gas to be a core risk for this company. So, at least at the for the time being, there are no plans for us to hedge any of these volumes.
Then your next question was related to the 75%. You know, that's sort of the typical production profile of each individual well is that you normally would produce about 75% of the total volume in the first 2 years. But that's, you know, sort of an average consideration. And then your $3.5 million per well, that's the actual cost of drilling the well. So it is not sort of, you know, implying any sort of capitalization of or including any capitalization of transportation charges and stuff like that. And when it comes to coal bed methane, that's something we've only looked at very sort of in a sort of passing way at this point.
Yeah, just one question on the CapEx again, Peter. If you did include the rest of the CapEx, what would the built-up cost per well be then, do you think?
If you include sort of the transportation and processing, you would probably have to add another $5.
Good idea. I mean, on if you look at this from a CapEx perspective, upstream CapEx, you're talking about $6 to $7 per barrel. If you add OpEx, you are talking about $4.5 to $5. And if you add sort of the transportation processing to this, you would add $6-$7.
So 6 or 7 OPEX, including transportation.
Cash upstream cost, OPEX is between 4 and 5. And if you add transportation, add on top of that, that would add approximately $6 to $7 per barrel to take
okay.
it to the market.
Okay, Aldo, thanks a lot.
But then I should remind you, this is, you know, it's in terms of location to the market, this is a very... very competitive location compared to alternatives.
Okay, I'll take a question from the Internet from Jason Kenny, ING. BP has mentioned in its July press release concerning a deal with Chesapeake that it was negotiating to get into the Marcellus play. Does your deal rule them out now? Do you have exclusivity with Chesapeake into this acreage?
Well, you know, the deal is structured such that it is possible also to include other partners, but there are certain limitations applying to that.
Okay. Can we have a question from the telephone, please, John?
Indeed. Our next question will come from Neil McMahon with Sanford Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Hi. Got a few questions. The first is really in terms of the volumes, recoverable volumes you've got per well. You're estimating 3.1 BCF per well, whereas as far as we know on the Marcellus, even to get a value of total recoverable reserves in the range of 2 BCF would be seen as pretty aggressive. Can you tell us how you came up, how you worked through to come up with such a high recoverable reserve number per well? And I've got a follow-up as well, please.
Well, what we have done, as I said, we have looked at well data from a number of wells that has been drilled in this area. Then we have looked at the horizontal wells that we have that has been drilled, and we have looked at the anomalies of these different wells, and then we have, based on that, made the judgment ourselves that that 3.1 is a reasonable number in view of all the data that has, that is available to us.
Maybe you could tell us, because I'm frankly very confused as where you got the data from, what some of the highest well recoverable volume estimates you were coming up with were some of the wells, because I'm struggling to get anywhere close to a 3.1 level.
Well, what we have looked at, the well data that has been available from, is it 350 wells in total, and then the ones that are directly related to this, the horizontal wells that have been drilled by Chesapeake, and looking at those average numbers, also taking into account the specific technical problems encountered in some cases, we have arrived at this as a reasonable number.
Maybe just a final question then. Given the state of Chesapeake's balance sheet and some of the issues they've gone through with trying to adjust their capex going forward, what have you done to look at the risks associated with Chesapeake to see if they are going to be able to afford to pay for their component of the capex going forward? I noticed you had some caveats in there to say, if they don't come up with drilling the volume of wells that you were expecting, you can change the carry. Maybe if you could go into that, please.
But what we have done is that we have obviously done a careful analysis of Chesapeake's situation economically, and of course these things are dynamic in the world we live in. But our best assessment is that this is something that they should be able to do. And through the carry mechanism is structured such that they have a strong incentive to deliver on it. So that's not really a concern to us. I don't know if you would like to.
No, just repeat that we have been through quite a lot of due diligence on the financials, and we are comfortable with the deal from that perspective, actually.
Okay.
I'll just take a question from the internet, and it's a little bit about the ownership and the days of Chesapeake. Actually, it's from Nitin Sharma at Casanova. Given the recent speculation about the takeover of Chesapeake, please explain the implications of any such potential takeover on the agreement announced today.
Well, in the agreement we have based ourselves on Chesapeake being our partner, and we have introduced in the agreement clauses to protect our interest also in the case of a potential takeover. So I think through the agreement that we are well protected also in that case.
John, could we have a question from the phone, please?
Indeed. Our next question will come from Robert Kessler with Simmons & Company. Please go ahead.
Hi, good day. I saw your figure on the total recoverable resources, this 2.5 to 3 billion barrels oil equivalent. I'd like to see if you could talk about translating those into proven reserves. Do you expect to book any proven reserves by year end this year? And then if you could give some progression on when those resources will be transferred into the reserve category.
I could comment on that. The rules for booking reserves is more on the complex side, I would say, but basically, fundamentally, what you have to do to book reserves in this context is to drill the wells. So So you have drilled the wells, and then you have a circle around the wells where you could sort of add volumes to it. But that's basically what you have. So with this, you will see this, you know, being booked more or less in line with the commitments and the drilling of the wells. Then SEC are in the process of considering adjustments to the booking regulations, and that could be in place by 2010. And so to the extent that is sort of could have impact on these kind of resources, I don't know, but it could have.
Okay, and then are there any conventional reserves in the same acreage area, or is this strictly shale gas?
Well, you know, what we are targeting is shale gas, but we do have rights extending sort of beyond this exact structure.
Any kind of resource figure around the conventional or
it could,
outside?
I mean, whether there are sort of deeper structures and opportunities, that has not played an important part in our consideration in this case.
Sure. Thanks very much.
I'll just take a question from the Internet from Fidelity again. Just to confirm the payment schedule for 2009-2012 once again, did you say 800 to 900 million U.S. dollars, approximately a year depending on expenditure?
Well, this will be based on the drilling profile, basically, and we have talked about the number of wells and the growth in the number of rigs. So we will pay 1-50 at the time of the closing, and then there will be sort of a payment according to the drilling schedule, and obviously we will drill more wells closer to 2012 than at the beginning of this period.
And actually, we estimate the cost of each well to be $3.5 million.
That's right.
On average. So
that's right.
Do your math, basically. Okay, can we have a question from the telephone, please?
Our next question comes from Barry McCarthy with RBS. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just a clarification, please, on the CapEx per well. Does that include the fracturing of the well, the preparation of the well for production, in addition to the drilling of the well? And then on the gas volumes that you hope to produce, what's the current infrastructure for exporting gas to market, and at what point could there be a bottleneck in terms of transporting gas which you could produce to markets? Thank you.
On the first part of the question, the answer is yes, it does. On the second part of the question, there is, of course, a need to establish the gathering infrastructure to bring it to the transmission lines. And on the last question of capacity constraints, we don't see any capacity constraints on that part of the system.
Okay, I will take another question from the internet, from Gudmund Israel, DNB Nord. Why did you not acquire Chesapeake Energy altogether? Was this considered?
Well, you know, I think the attraction of Chesapeake as a partner is Chesapeake as an operating organization with the capabilities that they have. They are good at doing their wells. They're good at developing these areas. They're good at putting together the acreage deals that forms the foundation here. So we felt that a partnership for us, where we are, is the thing that we want. So we did not really seriously consider buying Chesapeake as a company.
I'll just take one more question from the internet. It's from Kim Fouchier at JP Morgan. Can you give more details on current production volumes in the Marcellus and on the ramp-up profile, please?
Okay. Well, currently there are 6 wells producing around 3,000 barrels per day, 100%, so we would have our share of that. So this will be ramping up to a level of, we indicated, more than 50,000 barrels per day on our hand, on the Statoil Hydro equity, by 2012. And as I've commented on, this will be based on the drilling program, and there will be added continuously new rig capacity to drill wells, but in terms of absolute numbers, you will obviously see more additions to the production profile as you get towards 2012.
All right. Can we take a question from the phone, please, John?
Our next question comes from John Rigby with UBS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, thank you. Two questions. The first is on the estimated recoverable resources number that you quote. Can you make any comments around the risking that you've applied to come up with that number? Because it looks very close to the last number I saw on a net basis of the total unrisked recoverable reserves. The second is, can you just confirm on the transportation costs? You're assuming a new high-pressure sort of in-field transportation system. Would that be correct?
Well, what we have done in terms of risking is that we have looked at sort of the total acreage that we are getting into, and we have sort of identified the parts that we think are the interesting parts, which represents about 63% of the total acreage. And then what we have done is, as I said previously, we've looked at well data from these, 300 some, and then the 6 plus 20, also that's the 6 wells that that Chesapeake has been drilling, plus 20 other wells, and we have established a number per well, which we feel is realistic given, the continuity and character of the structure. So that's the way we have arrived at it. So we've done risking, you could say, at two levels in this case.
Okay, I see.
And you had another question, huh?
Yeah, just about the sort of the transportation, in-field. Is that assuming, a brand-new high-pressure transmission or system within the field?
No. What we look at is that you have to sort of develop the local systems to tie into the high-pressure system, but we don't really assume that there's going to be built another large transmission line through the area.
Right. And in terms of gas collection, though, as I understand it, most of the infrastructure is built around an existing coal bed methane production. Right? Is that compatible with what you would be producing from the deeper reservoirs?
No, it's not really compatible with that. So what we are doing is that we are assuming that we will have to put in a bit of pipeline ourselves, and part of the agreement is that the investments in the midstream, we will be participating together with Chesapeake on the same proportion as we are investing in the wells.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, I'll take a question from the internet. It's from Mario Scott at Carnegie. What is the average duration of the leases, and how much of the 1.8 million lease acreage expires within the next 1 to 2 years unless it's drilled?
I think in terms of the length of the leases, as long as you have drilled a well, then you are keeping the leases as long as you pay for it. So I think that's the short answer to the first one. The second one I didn't get.
How much of the 1.8 million leases or acreage expires within the next 1 to 2 years unless it's drilled? But that's
basically the same answer.
Yeah. And there's another follow-up question here. Do you have capacity, i.e. rig and people, to drill and develop the acreage during the lease period?
Yes.
Yes. Good. So we'll take a question from the phone, please, John.
Our next question will come from Jason Kenny with ING. Please go ahead.
Hi there, just wanted some clarity on the 50,000 barrels a day by 2012. Is that just pure equity volume, or does it include the carry volumes that you'd be getting from your 87% share?
That's our equity volumes and that's what we will get access to. So the carry, that's just the capex to paying for the deal as such, so we don't get volumes for that. So we'll get our equity volumes of 32%.
Fair enough.
We'll take another question from the phone, please, John.
Our next question, it'll come from Neil Martin with MF Global. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I appreciate that Chesapeake have had some fairly severe financing issues of late, but could you perhaps say what the planned ramp-up in terms of rigs is over and above their existing plans? The reason I ask is that they had been talking about sort of 20 or so thousand barrels of oil equivalent by end 2010, which is sort of 7,000 net to Statoil, and you're talking 50,000 by 2012, which seems an awfully ambitious target based on Chesapeake's plans. Thank you.
Well, one thing is that they have presented plans to the market which could not possibly discount this deal, and of course this deal is going to have some impact on their ability, and through the deal we have established the mechanisms for them to have sufficient economic incentive to execute on the programs, and these programs are now part of the programs of Chesapeake, so this is, you know, firmly embedded in their plans. But it was of course difficult for them to talk about, you know, this prior to the deal being made, because that deal changes also their capacity to execute.
And just as a follow-up, in terms of sort of LNG, you discussed at the gas seminar last week your sort of longer-term plans, but you have Snøhvit, you're expanding Cove Point, but one of the issues as to why LNG volumes in the Atlantic Basin have been transferred to Asia is that firstly U.S. demand has fallen away, but the increasing supply of unconventionals has obviated the need for LNG imports. I mean, to what extent is sort of getting into gas shale basically competing internally with your other sources of gas supply?
Well, you know, I think whatever you do in this game, I think it's interesting to establish you know, positions in different and different ends of the chain. So, I mean, obviously there is some competition between internal production in the U.S. and imports, but, you know, that will then be reflected in the price, and where the LNG goes, it's going to be a question of the U.S. price relative to prices in other areas. So we feel this is really quite a natural thing to do, given the fact that we have an interest to develop a position in the U.S. market.
Okay, and just to clarify finally, is that 50,000 net to Statoil in 2012, is that an average or a year-end rate?
That's an average, and it's at least 50,000 as an average for the full year.
Great, thank you.
Let me just take a question from the internet. It's from Marius Gore at Carnegie. Why does value per acre vary?
Also value per acre varies. I mean, we have an average price in this, of course, in looking at it and in sort of putting value at the different parts, you have to, you know, reflect the productivity and the value of that area. And, you know, even in this relatively homogeneous areas, there are variations in terms of thickness and prosperity of the prospective areas.
All right. Can we take a question from the phone, John?
At this time, we have no further questions.
I've got one question from Fidelity. What IRR rate do you use for this project to be economic, or rather, what natural gas price range, would break even?
Well, I think when it comes to the IRR rate, we do not disclose that. That depends a little bit on type of project and so on, but we require a rate of return which is significantly above our cost of capital, to put it that way. When it comes to the break-even prices, we have commented on that. It's typically a break-even price which is significantly below the current forward prices. So we are very comfortable with this deal and feel that these resources are highly competitive compared to the alternative sources of new gas into the.
I will take another question from the internet. It's from Marius Gord at Carnegie. Would you, through this deal, have access to deeper formations such as Utica and Herkimer?
Yes.
Clear and short answer. Have you got any more questions from on the phones, John?
Indeed, we have one question coming through from Joe Allman with J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi again. Could you discuss any specific capital commitments related to the search for some more gas resource internationally?
No.
Okay.
Not really.
are you saying that there are no capital commitments? Or?
No, what I'm saying is that when we are talking about the global cooperation, and I suppose that's sort of what you are referring to, with
yep.
Chesapeake, I mean, we will now have to spend a bit of time working together to sort of screen and evaluate the opportunities as we see them. And then we have to take them through our normal processes, and then at some point, I mean, they might convert into investment opportunities. But to start, you know, talking about numbers in that context, I feel is much too early, unfortunately.
Okay, gotcha. Great. And then in terms of the, back to the Marcellus Shale, in terms of the infrastructure spending, how much CapEx do you think you'll need to spend for additional pipeline and infrastructure in 2009 and 2010 and beyond?
Well, you know, we have a right and possibility to participate in those investments, and we really have to look at it, and then we'll make up our mind whether we will invest or whether we will pay tariffs to use the infrastructure.
Okay, gotcha. And then what's Statoil's role going to be in terms of the operations? I mean, we know that Chesapeake's going to be operating the properties, but will Statoil have a technical part to play in the development of the Marcellus?
Well, we will second people into the Chesapeake organization, but Chesapeake will be the operator of this, and you know, their procedures and ways of working will be applied. So we will not play a role as an operator in this.
Gotcha. And then lastly, you know, you're obviously talking about some pretty meaningful natural gas volumes coming online. Just to put that in context with the ramp up of other gas resource plays in the U.S., I mean, what are your thoughts about the possibility of an oversupply of natural gas in the United States over the near and medium term?
Well, you know, the charm of this thing is that you are making decisions as you go in terms of the wells that you are drilling, and you will, of course, have to have a keen eye also on the way the market develops. So we feel that there is a lot more optionality in this way of proceeding than the classical way of, you know, putting down the $5 billion in one big chunk and then producing as hard as you can.
I see. Great. Well, thank you very much. Very helpful.
I don't have any more questions from the Internet. Do you have any more on the phone, John, please?
Yes, indeed. I have another question from Carl Brown with Rebus Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I'm still just trying to get through a couple of the numbers that were mentioned earlier on the call. If you think you can drill 800 wells during this time period, 2009 through 2012, if I do the math on that, 800 wells times $3.5 million per well, I get to $2.8 billion. And then if I take, you know, 75% of Chesapeake's 66%, that's about roughly 50%. So I'm coming up with $1.4 billion versus the $2.125 billion. And I'm just wondering, is that 800 wells the right number, or is it, if I do math the other way, I come up with really needing to drill about 1,200 wells during that time period for their carry to work out to the $2.1 billion number?
I think when we got the specific question on 800, we were a little bit uncertain. We felt it was in that range, but we didn't have that exact number. So I think what you should look at on our hand is the CapEx of approximately $6 billion in the period from now until 2012, including 2012. So that's the CapEx spend that we are looking at, given the current program.
Okay, and I apologize. I missed earlier the comments about how the structure of the carry can change if the pace isn't what was expected. How does that actually work? If the pace of drilling is slower than expected, does your commitment of the up to $2.1 billion come down, or does your interest in the wells that are drilled go up?
No, the carry mechanism is fixed through an amount, through a period of time, and through the percentage. So there is no mechanism to sort of automatically extend the carry period if the well program is fixed. But of course, these things might, you know, in terms of changed circumstance, change. But basically, it's a sort of earn it or lose it mechanism defined by a period of time.
Okay. And if I do the math to come up with the $6 billion CapEx program and try to match that with your comment of getting to 40 rigs by 2012, are you anticipating that 40 rig to be an exiting rate during 2012 or a starting point for 2012?
Well, the 40 for 2012 is more like, you know, an average for that year.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Do you have more questions from the phone, please?
At this time, we have no further questions.
And I have no further questions on the Internet. So it's just left for me to say thank you very much for your participation and goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude today's conference call. I thank you for your participation. Have a nice day.